What does beauty look like? For a new generation, it comes in the form of filters and fillers, quickie surgeries, and carefully groomed online avatars. The price young women pay to compete in this digital world is documented in the new book, Pixel Flesh, How Toxic Beauty Culture Harms Women, by Ellen Atlanta. Ellen is a writer and brand consultant specializing in Gen Z and millennial culture who worked in the beauty industry for almost a decade. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
Hi, I'm Ellen Atlanta, author of Pixel Flesh, How Toxic Beauty Culture Harms Women. And I'm also a former beauty editor, beauty brand consultant, and beauty tech marketer. I started writing Pixel Flesh in 2019, when I quit my career in the beauty industry, after realizing that my job had become part of what felt like a real-life Black Mirror episode. I'm going to share five key insights from my book with you today, in the hope of creating a more beautiful future for women and girls everywhere. Insight number one is that the digital gaze is upon us. You might have already heard of Instagram face, the term coined by writer Gia Tolentino to describe the phenomenon in which celebrities are beginning to look uncannily alike. With poreless skin, high cheekbones, cat-like eyes, cartoonish lashes, a small, neat nose, and full, luscious lips. Their faces and features are increasingly bought and augmented in response to our digital realm. Exaggerated features designed to appeal to the screen, to fit perfectly in pixels, and to stand out when put on an Instagram feed. From Kylie Jenner to Kim Kardashian, Bella Hadid to Emily Ratajkowski, we're seeing the normalization of injectable procedures, cosmetic surgery, photo editing, and filter use in order to achieve this look that works in the digital, for the professionally beautiful. But by now, it has gone so much further than that. I found throughout my research that young girls are now filtering their existence through this digital gaze, living for a dimension beyond the physical world. Already under immense pressure from the beauty standard as it is, young girls are now feeling the compounded weight of existing in multiple realities and needing to be perfect in all of them. It's an issue that now transcends fame, fortune, and follower count. At dinner one day, I sat across from a 21-year-old who told me that, as a result of growing up online, every living moment is an out-of-body experience, a never-ending Big Brother experiment. Even when I'm crying, I'm wondering if my tears are falling beautifully or if my mascara is running in an aesthetic way, she told me. Just talking to you right now, I'm holding my stomach in and arching my back. I'm thinking about how I would look if someone were to capture me. If they were to take a photo of this moment, would I be beautiful enough? This insight was backed by research by Dr. Claire Pescott, who found girls as young as 10 describe this surveillance, this feeling of being watched, of needing to be perfect and flawless at all times. Their male peers are entirely unaware of its presence. I wish I was wearing a filter right now, one 10-year-old girl had said. We see this rise in perfectionism in young girls that's exacerbated by the digital translate into a rise in desire for cosmetic enhancements. Nose jobs are now the most popular surgery among teenagers, and it's a feature that's the most distorted by the digital lens. Work by researchers found that the close-up perspective of selfies, paired with a phone camera's typically wider lens, mean that noses in selfies appear up to 30% wider than they do in real life. I've lost count of the number of young women and girls I've met over the course of my research who are planning invasive beauty work and cosmetic surgeries simply to look good in photos. At a charity I work with, in London, with girls aged between 8 and 14, one girl told me, as her friends nodded along in agreement, that she doesn't go outside after school anymore, because she doesn't want people to see her real face any more than they already have to. Insight number two is that as a result of all of this, we're now facing the death of teenage girlhood. On TikTok, a video went viral recently of a young girl. It opens with, "Here's some things I do to slow down the aging process as a 14-year-old. I started doing most of these things at 12. Her routine includes taking 2 apple cider vinegar tablets a day, using 2 face masks a day, and applying retinol twice a day. She pays attention to the skin on her neck, as according to her, that's one of the main things that ages. She adds that on long road trips, she tapes construction paper to her parents' car window to block UV rays. So much of our disgust for women's bodies is tied to their natural function. Whether that's body hair, stretch marks, menstruation, or weight fluctuation, all key markers of puberty and the ascent into womanhood. To go through puberty whilst growing up online, in this glossy, perfected, beautiful space, is to face a horrifying discovery, as you watch your body deviate from the standard in real time. Between 2012 and 2018, the number of 18 to 24-year-old US women who considered anti-aging important or something they might want to add to their routine rose by 30%. This fixation young women and girls as young as 8 are developing with their appearance in our hypervisual digital culture is causing teenagers to adopt the routines, fears, and concerns previously reserved for those in their midlife and beyond. Convincing teenage girls and young women that they must expend valuable energy and resources into stopping the passage of time is a genius marketing move on the behalf of a patriarchy that wants to keep us hopelessly occupied physically and psychologically forevermore. Whilst we're all fighting to immortalise our faces in their teen image, what we're actually facing is the death of teenage girlhood, as the bridge between childhood and adulthood gets shorter and shorter. With the increasing fixation on appearance and the fetishization of youth, many young women and girls are being robbed of a time meant for experience, freedom, and experimentation. Instead of pushing boundaries, taking risks, learning who we are and what we like, what we're capable of and what we demand, we're learning how much acid will burn our skin and how many milliliters of poison we can safely inject into our heads. It is not enough to have us fighting to exist in 2D, to be visible, or 3D, to take up space. Now we must fight to exist in 4D, for the right to evolve in time. Insight number 3 is that this intensification of the beauty standard is fueling a new class divide. We've all noticed that there is a halo effect around beauty, that being beautiful or attractive can unlock opportunities, open doors, and improve how you're treated by others. But in an increasingly visual digital world, where image is everything and adherence is rewarded with platform and status, beauty as a currency, as a tool for social mobility, is only gaining value. Thanks to social media, selfies, and Zoom calls, our faces and bodies are always front and center, and have become something we should, quote-unquote, invest in. The more beauty you possess, the more wealth of all kinds you can accumulate. But, in the age of technology, beauty standards are creating a beauty tax that is higher than ever. There is now an expectation for women to not only undergo the usual roster of maintenance treatments, maybe hair appointments, nail appointments, eyebrows, lashes, and teeth, but also tweakments, injectables, and surgeries. Those who are celebrated for their beauty both on and offline are increasingly people who have undergone various surgeries and treatments. The pursuit of beauty is an entirely rational one. It often promises increased safety, credibility, status, power, followers, better health outcomes, better employment outcomes, opportunity and respect, especially for women. As a result, we are given little choice but to chase this elusive quality in order to get a better slice of the world. Or, as came up time and time again in my research, to simply feel human. As the cost of beauty increases, the jump between a manicure and a nose job, for example, is significant. People are being priced out and are putting themselves at risk financially in order to participate. Research by Refinery29 detailed how women are racking up thousands of pounds or dollars in credit card debt in order to get Botox and filler. The pressures levelled against women to retain and maintain the perfect face, resist the effects of ageing, remove their body hair, and groom themselves to perfection mean that beauty treatments are often paid for over other essential items. When our perception of ugliness is so often intertwined with disability, queer identity, race, and poverty, it will be those who are already marginalised who are most at risk from ostracisation. The result is a new beauty class system, in which there are those who can afford to participate and those who cannot, with a population who can afford not to visibly age, who can buy beauty and the very real rewards that come with it, and a population who can't. Insight number 4 is that social media is fueling the fragmentation of our bodies. Ask any woman or girl and she will produce, with ease, a list of her own body parts that are defective. She may be able to tell you that some parts of herself are okay, and perhaps name one or two things that she actually likes. But this is often rare. One study that really stood out to me in my research, and that resonated with readers, showed that when asked to describe their bodies, women tend to break themselves down into a series of pull-apart components that need to be fixed. Men, on the other hand, view their bodies as single units, as whole holistic entities. Perhaps most importantly, men think much more about their body's capabilities. Every single man asked to describe their body in a study by the University of Sussex talked about it in terms of what it could do. Not a single woman did. Instead, the women in the study assessed the value of their bodies solely as decorative objects, based only on aesthetic value. The fragmentation extended past their physical selves and into their sentient selves, a fracture between the body and its entitlement to value, purely for being. The rise of social media has exacerbated this issue. Studies show that girls often choose profile pictures that focus on their faces or upper torsos, while boys prefer full body shots. This suggests that boys are allowed to present themselves as whole beings, whereas girls feel compelled to highlight specific parts of their appearance for scrutiny and validation. We post images that break ourselves down into component parts, perfecting images of ever closer crops. We post a pair of lips, collarbones, breasts, a ribcage, a bum, treating our body parts like display objects rather than acknowledging ourselves as whole human beings. By capturing specific separate body parts, we intensify the beauty standard applied to that particular piece of ourselves, creating the blueprint for how we should look. Beauty, then, becomes a jigsaw puzzle of perfect pieces, all of which must come together. A feed of images full of dismembered women. That list of component parts is only getting more extensive and more intense. I met girls on their third nose job in their 20s, focusing on ever finer details of their face, on perfecting their nostrils, their columella, their alar rim, their infratrip lobule. And we know terms like this. I find myself fixating on my nasolabial folds, my hip dips, my buckle fat. Words that I didn't have knowledge of before the internet brought them to my attention. And if you don't know what those words mean, don't Google them. Save yourself. Our faces are in ever finer fragments, being intricately rebuilt in the image of the ideal. And in doing so, especially when it comes to facial features like noses, there's also this ancestral fragmentation, the erasing of millennia of cultural history from our faces and bodies in favour of a homogenised beauty standard. And my final insight number 5, is that sorority is self-care, that the future of feminism lies in our collective action. My belief, above all, is that we need each other now more than ever. To think and act as a collective, a sisterhood, and not in a cliched Instagram quote post kind of way, but in a real, tangible, community-driven way. I think it's vital for our survival in this world. In a reality that fortifies our isolation and individualism, in which your community online can feel simultaneously like everyone and no one, we need to come together to fight back. We, as an assembly, need to commit to creating circles that nurture our collective well-being, and I mean true well-being. Not self-loathing disguised as self-care. I realised in my months of researching and interviewing that when we come together, we don't need beauty or technology as a new form of spirituality. We don't need to spend money or harm ourselves or starve ourselves or fixate on our features. What we need is the same as ever. Each other. Touch, connection, affirmation, support. We as a collective have the power to create a more beautiful future for us all. The issue is systemic and structural, yes, that is something we should never lose sight of. The intersecting forces of patriarchy, capitalism, racism, fatphobia, colorism, classism are directly responsible for our experience of beauty culture, and they won't be neutralized overnight. But what we can contribute to is our collective well-being. We have immense power within our communities, both online and off, and we are all influencers in each other's lives. We need to combine the collectivism of second-wave feminism of the 1960s and 70s with the individual responsibility of modern movements. Instead of channeling your focus into the creation of a shrine for the self, ask how you can take action in the service of others, in service of the sisterhood. This is not to return to some troubled trope of a single female identity, but a call to remember that we have more in common than we realise, that we share more suffering than we know, and that we win and lose together. There is a mythological girl reborn in all of us, who will continue to reincarnate until we create tangible change. Our intergenerational goal should always be, as bell hooks said, to rebirth the girl within into a world where she is eternally worthy, not forever young. I hope you enjoyed listening and that you consider reading more in my book, Pixel Flesh: How Toxic Beauty Culture Harms Women. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ellen. That was 5 big ideas from Pixel Flesh: How Toxic Beauty Culture Harms Women by Ellen Atlanta. Also, check out our book bite for Die Hot with a Vengeance, Essays on Vanity by Sable Young. I'm Michael Kaufman. Have a great day.